And then you can just write it in. That's okay. That's what I did to the others.
Okay.
18, 19, 20.
Okay. Okay. We're back in session, in open session. We're going to do the evaluation of Miguel Bordalio, but I'd like to recognize Commissioner Michael Inchapo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, as I did in the prior evaluation of the general manager for GPA, I'd just like to go over the conflicts of interest sections that are listed in 4 GCA Chapter 15. I also checked 5 GCA and 12 GCA for any types of guidance on and laws that are requiring me to disclose any conflicts of interest. So just to be comprehensive, 4 GCA Chapter 15, which is the standard of conduct for elected officers, appointed officers, and public employees of the government of Guam, under subsection 15205, conflicts of interest, it is defined as no employee, in this case an employee, is defined as employee means any nominated, appointed, or elected officer or individual employed with the territorial agency as defined herein, including members of the boards or commissions and persons under personal services contracts, and persons under personal services contracts. It defines a conflict of interest as no employee shall take any official action directly affecting business or another undertaking in which the employee has a financial interest. And the financial interest is defined as financial interest means any interest held by an individual, his or her spouse, natural, adopted, or dependent children, parents, parents-in-law, siblings, or siblings-in-law, in which an ownership interest in a business, a creditor interest in an insolvent business, an employment or prospective employment for which negotiations have begun, an ownership interest in personal or real property, a loan or other debtor interest, or a directorship or officership in a business. And although I do not identify any direct business in which I would participate or with which Miguel would participate in, our company, Pacific Unlimited, do bid on contracts for both utilities. It does not identify a first cousin as in the section F as it relates, but I do want to disclose that I am first cousins with Miguel. Our mothers are our sisters. And for that reason, although I cannot identify a specific conflict of interest that is defined by this, I would, just as a rule, because of our relationship, I'd like to recuse myself from the evaluation process of the other guy.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Johnson, your excuse.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You can pick your friends, but you can't pick your relatives.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you,
Mark. Sure.
At this time, I also like to remind the commissioners that at the very beginning of this today's meeting, Commissioner Francis Santos had also indicated a conflict. As listed in Chapter 15, he is a brother-in-law, and that's listed as one of the conflicts for Commissioner, for General Manager Miguel Borden. He won't be sitting in. So there'll be three commissioners on this. Mr. Santos, Commissioner Judy Lopez, and myself. Okay. Miguel.
Sir.
Usually we let the candidate talk first.
I narrowed down my PowerPoint presentation to just 100 pages, sir.
Oh, thank you very much.
Go to page 98.
Yeah, what we're going to do is, I'm sorry, Commissioner Sanchez, would you do the honors of explaining the ratings?
Oh, you want to do that before the presentation?
Yeah,
let's
do that right now.
Okay, all right.
Just so the employee understands the rules of the game.
Thank you, Mr. Bordalio. You'll be evaluated on a scale of 1 to 5. A 5 means if you're rated a 5 in a particular category, and and you'll be evaluated for both the for managing operations, for managing finance, managing people, managing information, and personal competencies. Managing operations represents 30% of your total performance score, and there are individual sections within that that we will ask you to comment on, and we will comment on with you as well. Managing finance is 15% of your total score. Managing people is 15% of your total scores. Managing information is 10% of your total score. And personal competencies, strategic planning, and things of that like are 30% of your score. But those are evaluated only by the commission. We don't expect you to have a specific presentation per se on those personal competencies. And if we then ask you if you would consider rating yourself in the subsections of each of these categories before we rate you. And if you rate yourself a 5, you just in any particular category, we just ask that you give us a specific example of why you think you rated a 5. Similarly, the body is guided by the same thing. If a commissioner rates you a 5 in any section, we have to be specific as to what action or what basis it is that an individual commissioner rates you as a 5. Anything other than the 5, you can discuss to a great length or no length at your discretion. Any questions on how the scoring works? We ask you to work with us. This is the first time we have been, we've created such a formal structure, but we believe that it's worked very well for the other 6 colleagues that we've been reviewing. And it's dynamic. We may change it as we review you each year. But for now, this is the basis by which we will conduct your review. And it's for the periods 2018 to 2020 in particular. For the history, there was a review in 2018, and that's why we're asking you to focus primarily on fiscal years 2018, 19, and 20. Since that last review, actually I guess it was December of 2017. Right. So with that, where'd our chairman go? We'll turn it over to you, but we need our chairman. Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So
we've gone through the basics, and then you want him to present first.
Yeah.
And then he knows about his subject.
I was joking. I don't have a presentation to give you. However, I did prepare supporting material.
Sure.
For each of the commissioners.
Very good. Thank you.
So there are 3 documents. The spreadsheets indicate and correspond to all of the performance criteria on the evaluation form.
Excellent.
It provides where there is supporting data, numbers that indicate performance under that specific criteria, and then these lines are spark lines, which just are there to indicate the trend of the values over the period from 18, 19 to 20. Okay. So there will be, wherever there's data included, you'll see the trend lines. And then for criteria where we don't necessarily have data sets, to exhibit performance, I've provided supporting narrative, which is the second document.
Okay.
And then the third document is Commissioner Guthert's request some time ago. She asked for a list of top 20 accomplishments. I included a list of 25.
Oh, right. Wonderful.
So you got the 20 and then 5 bonus.
Whoa, okay.
Okay. I have 2. Do I have 3? I only have 2.
1, 2. You have the top 25?
Yeah. That's the one I did. Good. Thank you.
Okay.
So at your pleasure, commissioners, I can go through each one of the criteria, if you so choose.
Okay.
You want to do it the same way we did with Mr. Beneventi? So we had Mr. Beneventi, just like you, go through your presentation.
All right.
Then we'll go to scoring, because as you pointed out, all your submittals are relevant to the way we will score your performance, and it helps kind of link them to do as you did by category, by box, and that's all very helpful to us.
Okay, so we'll start with the criteria 1.1, reliability of water and wastewater systems. It's broken down into several subcomponents. 1.1.1 is reduction in frequency duration of outages.
Uh-huh.
And I've listed two data sets here. The first is main breaks per month. And you can see in fiscal year 18, we averaged 6. In fiscal year 19, we averaged 5.59. And in fiscal year 20, we averaged 2.75 main breaks per month. So the trend is decreasing, which is positive. The second is post-storm outages. And this one is presented in average days of service interruption per location for that fiscal year. And for fiscal 18, it was 1.86, 19, it was 1.5, and then 0 for fiscal 20, with no major storms causing any service disruption. And then the third item is post-storm outages, maximum day duration. So for any specific location during a storm, what was the maximum number of days service was interrupted? And in fiscal year 18, we had 4 days at a single location, which was the highest. In fiscal 19, we had 2 days only post-storm interruptions. And that was a half and then 0 for fiscal year 20. Again, the trend is decreasing downward. Part of that is because of performance, and part of it is just because of weather. The next criteria is 1.1.2, water booster pump station reliability. We report this every month at the CC meetings, and you can see the averages are presented for fiscal year 18 at 93.7% operability, for fiscal year 19, 94.8% operability, and for fiscal year 20, 97.1% was the average. So an increasing trend of pump station reliability over the 3 years. 1.1.3 is reduction in the frequency or duration of SSOs, sewer system overflows. And you can see the performance is a little up and down here. In fiscal year 18, we averaged 10 SSOs per month. In fiscal year 19, it went up to 14. I believe we had heavier weather in 19. And then in fiscal year 20, it averages at 7 per month. There's a note here, fiscal year 20 numbers reflect only 9 months of averages. My data there was limited. On the next one is 1.1.4, sewer pump station reliability. Again, this is something that we report on monthly at the CC meetings. And the averages for fiscal year 18 are 85.8%, for 19, 84.7%, and for 20, 87.2%. So overall, there's an increasing trend in reliability. However, this is still something that we are working to improve. 1.1.5, production well reliability. There's two metrics that we have here. One is the active wells per average number of active wells per month. And in fiscal year 18, it was 96. In 19, it was 99. And in fiscal year 20, it was 95. And I would point out that these are monthly averages by year, but we have made a concerted effort to try and reduce the number of wells in operation as part of our water loss control program. So if we can operate with less production and still provide adequate service levels, then it reduces the total supply of water produced. And so that kind of helps us with our water loss control. The second one is the number of wells that we have on standby average per month. And for fiscal year 18, it averaged 4 wells. For 19, 6, and for 20, we averaged 9 wells on standby, which means we have more reserve capacity. And so this is an increasing trend, which is a positive. Moving on to 1.1.6, wastewater treatment plant reliability. The metric I use here is in terms of upgrades that have been completed for MPDS, our discharge permit compliance. And for fiscal year 18, we were 20% upgraded, with 1 out of 5 permitted plants with MPDS permits being upgraded. That was the Agate Santa Rita that came online. And then in fiscal year 19, it went up to 25% because we took Baza Gardens off that list and converted it into a pump station. That was in fiscal year 19. So it went to 25%, and then in fiscal year 20, Manic Mariso came online, so 2 out of 4 for 50%. So it shows an increasing trend, and fairly soon when we complete Northern District, that number will increase. For 1.1.7, maintaining service pressure levels, there's a couple, there's one metric that we're presenting. The low or no pressure falls, average per month, average falls per month, that's been up and down a little bit, 22 average falls for low or no pressure in fiscal year 18, 15 average falls per month in fiscal year 19, and then 32 for fiscal year 20. So that is an overall upward trend, which is not where we want to be.
Do you have a feel for what's causing that, the increase?
Yeah, we've had a lot more issues with wells tripping offline. The more recent year, simply because of the condition of the
power system,
and so that has resulted in various instances where we have
an increase in the number of events with
right. Flushing. There's also a narrative response regarding maintaining service levels for pressure. As you know, when we completed the 2018 master plan, we did establish we went from 4 levels of service goals to 16 levels of service goals, which included one specifically addressing the range of pressure. The first 2006 master plan only said that we would maintain adequate pressure levels, but we have expanded that and included targets on the high end and the low end. So the 35 PSI to 90 PSI range. So we have those as goals now. And as you know, we are implementing the pressure zone realignment plan in order to make sure that within each pressure zone, we're between those two levels by making piping and valving improvements in the distribution system. But until this project is completed, we don't necessarily have a permanent way to monitor the pressure in every zone. So we're undertaking that right now with targeted areas where we know we have pressure problems, either high or low, to install pressure loggers there and monitor that specifically. And then if we ever get to an AMI metering system, then we would have the ability to measure pressure at the customer's, each customer's meter, and get that feedback regularly, so we'll be able to monitor. So that's where we are going in the future, and perhaps we'll set up different KPIs or different performance indicators later down the road.
Okay.
Okay, moving on to 1.2, compliance of water and wastewater systems. 1.2.1 is compliance with drinking water standards. There's two metrics there, the number of NOVs per year, which has been zero across all of those years, 18, 19, and 20. And then the reporting of our CCR, consumer confidence report, and drinking water quality report results, whether those are issued timely, and for all 3 years it has been issued on time. 1.2.2 is compliance with effluent discharge permit requirements, and this relates to the wastewater treatment plants. And the information provided in the narrative essentially discusses what the compliance requirements have been under the court order, and then when the NPDES permits were issued after the 2009 denial of the 301H wood waivers, the requirement to comply with secondary treatment standards went into effect, and of course, we've been technically in violation of that. We resolved that with Aguas Santa Rita coming online. We resolved that by taking Boston Gardens offline. So, for two of our plants, we addressed the issue. Humanic Meso, the upgrades have been completed, so that's the third plant that we have. And then, as you know, we're working on Northern District, and then again in the future. So the narrative provides an explanation of that, shows some progress with respect to that criteria. 1.2.3, maintain internal QA/QC processes. We don't have a metric or numbers for that, but I did provide a narrative. essentially explaining that part of the CCU's mandate to me was to bring on AGMs to assist with management so we could focus more. Part of the reason would be so we could focus more on quality control for the services that we offer. So we've made progress there in filling the AGM administration and support position, and that's filled right now. And then the AGM ops position, we have an interim or acting, which I hope to make permanent in our position as well. So we've made some progress there. We've also established a QAQC program for our meter program. So we're taking random samples of meters from that are deployed in the field and bringing them back for testing and quality control. And that is an ongoing effort. We have expanded it since we first started it to include equipment to allow us to do large meter testing, where we test the meters in place and don't have to bring them back to the test bench facility. So that's been another advancement in that area. And under the proposed reorganization structure, I did want to create, we have it down on our interim org chart, two overall QAQC positions, one as for overall field safety officer and another one for field compliance officer. And the idea for both of those would be that they would have authority over safety and compliance and overall operations in the field, which would be appropriate authority, and we would use those positions to stay in front of compliance issues and safety issues from outside regulatory bodies. So that's something that we hope to fill once we are able to staff up a little more in the compliance and safety division. Next on 1.2.4, customer compliance programs. So this is essentially our FOG program and cross connection and control programs. And so we have metrics here indicating the number of inspections per year, so including re-inspections. So in fiscal year 18, we had 560. In fiscal year 19, we had 332. And in fiscal year 20, 91. But that's primarily because of the COVID impact, the decreased number of inspections. Criteria 2 for the FOG program, SSO is due to FOG by year. In fiscal year 18, 60 of the SSOs were attributed to FOG, 85 in 2019, and then 51 in fiscal year 20. So there's an overall reduction there. Cross-connection and control program, the number of inspections per year for fiscal year 18 was 30, for fiscal year 19 was 64, and for fiscal year 20 there have been 60. There's been a concerted effort to do those inspections, and we're augmenting our normal data set with meter flags, so we have any reverse flow meter flags that come up get sent to the compliance section for the cross-connection program for inspection. So there's been a lot of inspections in recent years. And then the fourth metric is the number of notice to comply and notice of violations issued by year. In fiscal year 18, there were only 11. In fiscal year 19, there were 46. And in fiscal year 20, there were 18. On 1.25, meeting our court order and consent decree requirements, the two metrics that we present on normally are quarter performance inspection percentage of projects complete, 97.8 in fiscal year 18, 98.9 in fiscal year 19, and as you know, we only have one quarter of project remaining to complete, and so it's going to flatten out until we get that done over the next 2 years. Moving on to 1.3. System safety, security, and resiliency. 1.3.1 is improved physical security. The metric there is theft incidents per year.
There's still batteries.
And in fiscal year 18, there were 24 incidents. Fiscal year 19, there were 52. And fiscal year 20, there were 16, and in the remarks section, you'll note that we had a spike in copper wire thefts that plane does our remote well sites during fiscal year 19, and that accounts for the increase. We responded by providing increased security services, and that then dropped. 1.3.2 is improved cybersecurity. The three metrics there are the employees trained by year. In fiscal year 18, we had 257. In fiscal year 19, 262 employees either trained or retrained, refresher training on cybersecurity provisions. And then in fiscal year 20, only 39. And again, this is due to COVID impacts. We did not have our normal trainings because of that. Metric number two is cyber incidents reported by year. They're pretty low, 1, 2, and 1 over the 3-year period. And then the third metric is cyber, the 2018 cyber assessment findings that have been resolved. So you recall we did the penetration testing and cybersecurity assessment. And so in fiscal year 18, we had resolved 19% of the findings. In fiscal year 19, that number had climbed to 60%, and fiscal year 20, it's at 71%. Moving to 1.3.3, ensuring a safe work environment, the metric we have there is the OSHA reports that we issued by year for reportable accidents. We had 3 in fiscal year 18, 2 in fiscal year 19, and 2 in fiscal year 20. So the numbers are relatively low. 1.3.4, maintain emergency response plan and readiness. Two metrics, one is one metric and one there, one narrative information to supplement that. For the emergency response plan and readiness, we've in the past limited our involvement to the overall Government of Guam emergency response plan. More in the years since I've been here, we have encouraged, and the operations guys have come up with this largely on their own, so I don't take the credit for it, but they've done a good job of coming up with their own crisis response plan and readiness checklist, and these are implemented now, and we saw the numbers I previously discussed about outages during storms. In large part, those numbers have come down because of what the ops guys have done in preparing those checklists and making sure that they're followed prior to each heavy weather event. And so we've, in addition to having the overall global emergency response plan, we have a crisis management plan internally, which we have beefed up, and we have increased the number of flex tanks that we have available. So the resources to respond to post-emergency recoveries has increased as well. So we coupled that with some operational improvements in our ability to top off reservoirs prior to a storm. So that has also been a positive, which isn't necessarily reflected in the metrics. And then just for our formal emergency response plan, there's an annual review and then updates. And so for fiscal year 18, we did a review, also in 19, but in 20, we reviewed and updated and submitted that updated plan, I think, to US EPA. 1.3.5 covers continuity of operations plan and readiness. Again, similar, the plan was updated in fiscal year 20, primarily in response to the COVID pandemic. And there's a narrative explanation on which we've been briefed on before, on essentially what measures we took and are now included in the continuation of operations plan, or the COOP as it's referred to. Moving forward, I think we can develop some performance indicators for this based on our formal adoption and annual review of the plan, as well as formal adoption and annual review of emergency or pandemic response standard operating procedures which have been put into place since COVID-19 hit. So all of those measures we're in the process of formalizing into standard operating procedures, and we will have annual reviews and updates of those, and that could be a future performance indicator. Moving on, 1.3.6, improve water resource and aquifer protection. You know, we maintain a good working relationship with WERI and have supported their comprehensive aquifer monitoring program by sharing data with them, and then they provide us with a state-of-the-art aquifer report and additional guidance when we need it or additional analysis when we need it. I'd like to report something that isn't currently covered by an existing program. Is, as you know, we are expanding the aquifer monitoring capabilities by putting in 7 new deep monitoring wells and rehabilitating 12 of the existing monitoring wells. So the ownership question of those wells we're working to resolve. There are essentially, we're trying to work with the Navy to establish ownership and responsibility to sustain those wells for the ones that are inside the fence and outside the fence. And so for outside the fence ones, we've established a list of whose property they're on because they weren't put in by us, but we have a vested interest in the data that comes from those wells in order to help us monitor our water resource and to manage it properly. So we are working to secure either assignment of or ownership rights to those wells with the government of Guam for the various properties that they're on. And then the Navy is assuming ownership and maintenance responsibilities for all the ones that are located on base. And so that'll be reflected in an appropriate memorandum of agreement through the One Guam Initiative, which I will present to the board once it's close to finalization. So that's efforts that we are moving forward. We'll be able to define performance in this criteria. Okay, moving on to section 1.4, capital improvement program and system renewals. 1.4.1, updated water resource master plan. There's the two metrics here, the Water Resource Master Plan Review and Update and the 5-year CIP. So in fiscal year 19, both of those were updated. Fiscal year 18, both were updated. In 19, we reviewed the Water Resource Master Plan and established a new 5-year CIP. And for fiscal year 20, the Water Resource Master Plan was reviewed and the 5-year CIP was updated. 1.4.2 is achieved target CIP spending plans, and this is tracked by CIP expenditures by year. So for fiscal year 18, our target was 71.9 million, and we expended 45.9 million. In fiscal year 19, our target was 29.5 million, and we expended 156 million in capital improvements. And for fiscal year 20, we expended 40.8 million, and our CIP target was 112 million. And I will note that for fiscal year 20, that number is low in part because of the delay in securing bond funding that was part of the target, 1.12 million for that fiscal year.
Miguel, I apologize. The CIP asterisk was the target or the actual?
The CIP number in parentheses is the target.
Is the target. So in 2018, you were below the target, but in 2019, you exceeded the target significantly.
Right.
And when I add the cumulative, 196 to 241, to the targeted, you're actually a little ahead of the total. It's, the total target was about 212, and you've done 196 plus 40, 230, 230 million.
Right.
So over the 3-year period, even though some of you are ahead, some of you are below, on a cumulative basis, the actual CIP has exceeded the target when
right.
you add it together.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
There is also a supplemental narrative regarding the target. And essentially, that's the moving forward part I would like for us, as is spelled out in the financial program in the 20-year master plan that was adopted by the CCU. The idea is to move towards revenue funding of our annual CIP renewals and debt financing only of, for lack of a better word, the lumpy capital improvement projects like new treatment plants, new pump stations. But annual pipe replacements and those things should be funded out of revenues. And so we've not proposed those targets yet, but moving forward, we hope to, and then that will be a metric by which we can track progress on this particular performance criteria. Okay. Moving to 1.4.3, achieve water system expansion goals. There is a narrative supplement for our existing, kind of explaining our existing line replacement program. Since 2012, we've had a line replacement program that has gone through, I think we're on phase five now, so it's been through five phases. That has resulted in the installation of over 98,000 linear feet or 18 or so miles of water distribution piping. And that's, you know, replacement of existing and expansion of piping to larger sizes. So we're currently working on several expedited projects that the board is very familiar with because of the many complaints that we do get about Paulo Ferdinand Street in Santa Rita, for example, which is in construction. Casimiro and Tari Road, which I believe is in procurement, and Tota Cunhada Road, which is pending procurement. So we're in the final stages of design resolving some easement issues on that, and then we'll put it out to bid. So these are what we have accomplished and the work that we've done in recent years and continuing to today. But in the 20-year master plan that provides additional metrics for this, we do have two programmatic items. The asbestos cement pipe replacement program, which is scheduled for a start of fiscal year 22. So we have not expended any CIP money under those specific CIP line items yet. But for the ACP pipe, we will in fiscal year 22. And then for the 2-inch galvanized replacement project spending, we were supposed to spend $2.73 million in fiscal year 20, which we did not. Again, that in part was due to our delay in getting the CIP approved and the financial plan approved.
Again, I'm sorry, how many linear feet in this have you added or upgraded?
98,000, over 98,000 linear feet.
During this 3-year period, then? Is that the right?
Since 2012, sorry.
Oh, since
2012.
Okay.
Moving to 1.4.4, achieve wastewater system expansion goals. There are two metrics, and there's also a narrative supplement provided for you. Essentially, that describes the work that we've done since 2016 in working with EPA to try and identify customers on septic tanks that are within 200 feet of GWA, existing GWA sewer lines to try and encourage connection to the public sewer. We also have an existing sewer connection revolving fund for a loan program, but it is meagerly funded and it's not very user-friendly. The requirements to obtain a loan under it are pretty onerous, and therefore not too many people take advantage of it. And even if they did, we wouldn't have enough funding to have many people on the program itself. So we do have in the master plan a septic tank elimination program that was identified and which does call for capital improvement project spending to expand the wastewater collection system by 5,000 linear feet per year starting in fiscal year 22. So we are currently conducting an analytical study which will include recommendations on how to improve the septic tank, or I'm sorry, the sewer connection revolving fund. Proposals that have been made and will be presented in that analytical study include bumping up the total amount available for the revolving loans, and easing the requirements to qualify for the program, and then also a public outreach effort to try and get more people to connect. So those are some of the anticipated ways that we could track this area of performance. The metrics that are listed here are essentially just the septic tank elimination program spending, which won't be applicable, as I mentioned, until fiscal year 22. And then the sewer connection revolving fund, the active accounts, you can see that for fiscal year 18 and 19, there were only two active accounts, and then 20, we got one more, so we're up to three. 1.4.5, achieve non-revenue water and water loss reduction goals. There's a narrative that's been provided to supplement the metrics that are listed here, which essentially explain the difference through the evolution of our water loss control program from what it was, more of a project-based leak detection and repair program, to something that is now more multifaceted and comprehensive, which, you know, the bulleted items that are listed there include the production meter replacements. As I mentioned, we do, if we reduce the amount of water we produce, it helps the overall ratios for water loss control. Master meter installations, pressure zone realignment project, which I mentioned previously, which is now in construction. The pilot testing of satellite leak detection for us to be able to identify leaks in areas where water lines are not documented, such as in undeveloped areas and in former military properties where we've inherited the system. And then also the pilot testing of district metered areas to establish discrete areas where we can monitor the water supply going in and the customer demand and compare those two numbers to see where there are leaks and then perform targeted leak detection and repair. And based on that pilot test, we've seen a water loss recovery of 45% on average in three different areas, so we know that it can be effective. And so our future efforts will be focused on establishing permanent district metered areas across the distribution system island-wide. The metrics that are presented here for you, 2A, 2B, and 3, are the AWA water audit percent non-revenue water by year. For fiscal year 18, that was 47%, that's calculated by the water audit software. And for fiscal year 19, it dropped to 43%, and then for fiscal year 20, it dropped to 40%. Now, keep in mind that these numbers incorporate all of the unbilled, unmetered, and unbilled metered figures, which don't necessarily show up in when we get our annual audit, the financial non-revenue water calculation, different calculations, so the numbers will appear differently, but it is showing a steady decrease over the 3-year period.
So Miguel, is this the, from a more simplified ratepayer point of view, is this is that water loss challenge? Is this the where you're measuring the actual water loss of what we pump out versus what we sell and the differential?
Using the AWWA method.
Using
yes.
The AW, which is the national standard for most the water utilities.
Right.
This is the one where it's a little more. Is this the one where it's a little more refined? We net out the water that we use.
Right.
It's been a perception created in large part by reality in ourselves that, you know, you hear the number 60% water loss, but these numbers are in the low, you know, below 50 and are now in the low 40s. Is this a more accurate reflection of the actual water loss that is occurring net of what we're using plus just
right.
The loss that is out there? Would we be comfortable in presenting to the public, or would you be comfortable in presenting to the public that our new water loss ratio is 40% versus the historically perceived 60%? Because one, in part, there's been work done.
Right.
That, I mean, how do you go from, you know, not so good to better? You do work. And does this 47% to 43% to 40%? Reflects the work that's being done by your team, you and your team, and is it a more accurate public number we should share with the public that says now with the refinements that we've made using the same national criteria that all other water systems use, our non-revenue water we used to call it unaccounted for water, which is actually non-revenue water, it's technically accurate, is now down to 40% from the perception over many years that it was well over 50 to 60%.
So I would say I'm comfortable sharing the numbers. I mean, we do, when we present the water audit numbers to the board, they are shared with the public, but we haven't proactively, for example, sent out a mailer on this. And it's a bit difficult to explain the technical reasons why the numbers are different. When the annual audits are done, you're looking at the gross number that we produce and buy from the Navy, and then the gross or the amount that we sell to our customers or bill to our customers, and the difference is that is what gets reported as water loss, which is not actually the case. The numbers that we produce, in part because of some of the work that we're doing, the production needs replacement fees found based on the analysis associated with that project during the design phase, that the metering inaccuracies in our production meters, as they are configured,
was overstated.
Was
overstated the amount that we were pumping out.
Right, and so
that overstates the loss.
The AWWA method is a robust analysis which allows you to include metering inaccuracies both in production and in demand. The other issue that we faced, the financial data only shows what billing data that we have, and you know that we've had an ongoing meter problem which we've now resolved. But historically, and these numbers here reflect that history, we are showing or under registering what is actually being consumed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that
number
contributes to a higher water